Are the children leaving tonight, Brother Scotty? They're leaving. All right, bye, kids. Oh, yeah, you're having the impromptu mission team activity. I hope no one gets hurt. Have a great evening out there. Take your Bible, church. Turn with me to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5 in your Bible. Ephesians chapter 5 in your Bible. Maybe it is because I'm a pastor, and on a regular basis deal with death and dying. Maybe it's because just a week or so ago I was in a hospital and prayed with Bobby Spurbeck before she went down for a test, and then just hours later she passed in the presence of the Lord. Maybe it's because a little bit before that we had a funeral for one of our stellar and pillar members of our congregation, Tom Brown, who passed into the presence of the Lord. Maybe it is because before that we buried my mother-in-law, Joyce Lyles. Maybe it is because I've had opportunity in recent days to be at the bedside of people who are terminally ill and for whom we would use the phrase, their time is limited. Maybe it's just part of being a pastor, but it's something about, I think, also the fall time. Maybe it's the fall time. I'm noticing right now the change in season, which to me marks the passing of time. Everyone has a different way of marking the passing of time. And of course, we all have alarms on our phones, and we all have digital or analog clocks to tell us what the time is. We all have calendar, whether they be paper or electronic. I by far prefer paper, but I know electronic is popular today. We have calendars that mark the days and the weeks. And then, of course, we have seasons that mark the years. The year season begins in really January, of course, with our regular year, but the spring would be our first full season, and then we go into summer. Don't you love summertime, by the way? Do you love summertime? We used to, Pastor Monty, someone said today, well, I really am looking forward to some cool weather. Hush your mouth. By the way, did you notice I didn't say shut up? Because there's a better way. If you're from the South, you can just say hush your mouth. That sounds classy, doesn't it? I'm going to try to practice that from here on out. But I love summertime. I love summertime. But how many have noticed the leaves are starting to turn a little bit? Have you noticed? And they're starting to come down. And when you drive down some of the country roads that have leaves scattered on them, if there's a car in front of you, the leaves are picked up by the wind of the car and they kind of dance across the roadway before they settle in into the ditch on the other side. And every time there's a little breeze that stirs the tops of the trees, the leaves begin to fall down and they dry in your yard. And you look around and you say to yourself, I know pretty soon I'm going to have to do an awful lot of raking out here. At least we think that where I live. And the battle for leaf removal is already beginning. We're just beginning to see the early signs of that. We get up in the morning and things are cooler than they were, what we were used to in the summer, and there's a little chill in the air, not anything frosty at this point, and for that we're thankful, but there's a little bit of a chill in the air. There's a freshness about the air, the smell, the air is kind of fresh in a sort of a way. There's also a pungent odor in the air. I think oftentimes it is the cottonwood trees. The cottonwood trees are some of the last to leaf out, and they're some of the first to drop their leaves, and they drop their leaves with a pungent odor, and in our little subdivision, when you drive into the gravel drive, the cottonwood trees have dropped leaves there, and the cars crush those leaves, and it's almost a spicy and pungent odor that comes up off of the ground that always reminds me of fall. But with fall comes the idea of the passing of time, the idea that we're going to move from one season to the next, and that as we do that, when we do four in succession, we've completed another year. And how many would be with me in this room and would say, Pastor, the older I get, the faster it seems time is going? Is that, look at that. Wow, that's a vast majority of people in this room. It's not that time is moving any faster, nor our methods of measuring time have changed in any way. No, not at all. It's just that as we get older, I think we tend to value the fact that we have this commodity. It is more precious to us. Perhaps it is because there are more things that are forced into the time that we're allotted in life, but we value it more, or at least we should. We look at it as something that is more precious, something that is certainly not to be squandered. We measure it as we do in months and days and years and moments and minutes and hours. We do all of those things, and yet we really don't understand the great value that time has until we think about it deeply. It is unfortunate, but for some people, they never reach the place where they think deeply about the passing of time. They don't pay any attention to it. They don't mind it. They don't consider it. For some people, life is spent primarily in squandering time, and this perhaps is more true in our age and time, in our culture, than at any other time. Your Bible's open to Ephesians chapter 5. Look, please, if you will, with me at verse 15. Ephesians 5, verse 15. See then that ye walk circumspectly. The idea of circumspectly is carefully. Thoughtfully would be a good way to put that. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools. A fool blunders along in life thoughtlessly and carelessly. A fool is an individual who doesn't really think things through. He certainly has no particular plan. He blunders his way through. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. Verse 16. Redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Redeeming the time. I spoke recently, I think it was last Sunday morning, on the idea of redemption, the idea of buying or purchasing something back. God says that we're redeemed by the purchase price of Jesus' shed blood. But here the same word is used to instruct us to redeem or to buy back something that God has entrusted us with, and that is the time. He says, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. Verse number 16 is sandwiched between two verses that speak of wisdom and foolishness. And in the middle of that is this, the concept of redeeming or recognizing the value of time and using it properly. And I think this is an important reminder to us because God only gives us one lifetime. I often say that, something similar to that, in relationship to hunting. I love hunting. I love fishing. By the way, I've had great fishing down at Jeddo Lake this year. I've had tremendous fishing. I've caught tremendous bass. I love to go out in the sun and fish. I enjoy everything outside that I can possibly do. I love to be outside. And I've had great fishing. But I am looking forward to going on a little hunting trip this fall. And I say this to people who wonder about it. Then, Pastor Monty, you go every year hunting. Why do you go every year hunting? There's a real simple answer to that. God only gives you so many fall times in your life. Have you ever thought about that? Why would you squander one by not going hunting? That's a serious question. You're only given, well, Pastor Monty, you know, I can't do it this year, but I'll do it next year. You don't know that there is a next year. See, some people treat time the way they treat finance. They buy it on credit. They promise themselves that somewhere down the line they're going to actually do something, but then time runs out unexpectedly. Time should not be used carelessly like some people use a credit card, nor should we have wishes and impulses and be filled with all kinds of good intentions that somehow just never take place because honestly we find that we somehow ran out of time. The funny thing about time is this, you really don't know how much you have. Think about it this way for a moment. Rather than picturing me as I am tonight, this well-formed, athletic, tremendously masculine. You want to know where's the beef? Beef's right there. Rather than picture me the way that you normally would, picture me as a gigantic hourglass. Everyone know what an hourglass is? An hourglass has sand in it. Now picture, by the way, that's not my waist. It doesn't get that skinny, let me tell you that much. It comes down to this. Picture me as a tremendous hourglass. Now, let's think about this for a moment. There's sand on the top side that's coming down. That marks the expenditure of time. That is the way we mark the, we don't really do that anymore unless you have an egg timer, but we used to mark the expenditure of time that way. And in the bottom, there's sand. I am 52 years old. I can't see what my hourglass looks like. I can't see that, neither can you. But here's something I'm pretty sure of. There's probably more sand in the bottom than there is on the top if you're 52. Because if not, just to equal it out, you'd have to live to be 104 years old, okay? And I have no intention of living to be 104 years old, unless the Lord wants me to, in which case I'm going to be a thorn in the side of everyone that is around me. Because the only thing I can think of that is good about getting old is you don't have to have a filter. The older you get, the more you can say whatever you want to say. But if you will think with me for a moment, everyone has that hourglass about their life. I think there's more sand in the bottom than there is in the top. For some of you, you're pretty certain there's more sand on the bottom than there is in the top, unless you're planning to live to be 160. You're pretty sure that that's the case. But even for people in this room who are younger, who would make the assumption Well, I've got more sand on the top than there is on the bottom because I'm in my 20s or I'm in my 30s. May I remind you that there is no guarantee of tomorrow. And that health that we think is invincible can in a moment be shattered and changed. We can get in a moment a diagnosis of something so far out of the blue we weren't expecting it at all. And all of a sudden, that time, that idea that we thought we had plenty of time forever and forever, there's plenty to, Pastor Monty, I have years, I have decades. That attitude melts like snow under the hot sun. And that's why Paul in Ephesians chapter 5 tells us to redeem the time, to buy it back, to reclaim it, to conserve it. In other words, to be very careful with how you spend, how you invest your time. Think of time, if you will, as a commodity. The word redemption carries with it the idea of commodity and buying something back. Think of it as a commodity. Some of us will spend time, and that's okay. We spend time with a friend or we spend time with family. Some of us will waste time. That's a tremendous tragedy. There are many, many people who do that. By the way, today there is a deception about time. You are often wasting time when you think you're doing something productive. Listen to me. Anything that captivates your time and your thinking, into which you pour hours subconsciously or almost unconsciously, anything that engages you to that extent that keeps you from really living your life is a waste of time. Facebook. I'm just being honest. Well, Pastor Monty, I'm just scrolling through. But people in this room know how easy it is to scroll through and spend an hour scrolling through. It amazes me how addicted we are to this. By the way, it also makes me laugh at whenever I mention Facebook negatively, how angry certain people get. Do you know why? I'm confronting your addiction. I'm very serious. I'm confronting your addiction. I think it would be great if every, and I don't have Facebook. Do you know why? It would take too much of my time. Pastor Monty, can't you discipline yourself? No, sometimes I can't. Sometimes it's absolutely irresistible for me to page through something. I don't even know because I've never had it. But page through something and see what Susie Q is up to. She went to Walmart? Wow. Who cares? Why do people post that? I don't understand. But I'm suggesting if time is a commodity, sometimes we waste it. We should learn how to invest our time. We shouldn't squander our time. And here's the worst. Whenever someone says something like this, "Ah, Pastor Monty, I'm just killing time." Why would you kill time? It is the most valuable commodity that you have. Now, in preaching this message, I am not saying that you have to be consciously engaged in work and effort every moment of the day. That would be unbalanced. In fact, that is not what the Lord Jesus exemplified. But when we talk about time, we understand it as a commodity. We understand we're only given so much, and so we learn to value it, to measure it, and to use it properly. I need to learn to view time as valuable, that I never can say in honesty, "Oh, I've got all the time in the world," because I don't. I don't know if I have the time from this sermon until next Sunday preaching another one. Can I be morbid with you for a moment? There'll come a day when I'll preach the last sermon behind this pulpit. I'm not planning to leave, by the way. Don't get worried. Or don't rejoice. Don't go out to eat and have some big parties. "Ah, the preacher said he's leaving." Nope, not doing that. But there will come a day when I won't physically be behind this pulpit. There'll come a day maybe, I don't know how things are going to happen, because I hope the Lord comes back in the rapture. I'm listening for the trumpet. But should the Lord tarry's coming, there'll come a day when they lay my handsome body out in a casket. You know, I don't think it has to be double wide anymore. I think it can be just a normal size casket, maybe extra long, a little tall. No, Ken? You don't think so? You think they're going to scrunch up my knees against the top of that thing to fit me in there?
I think they're
going
to have to add a stretcher to the sides.
To the what? Stretcher? You think so? Just a, well, probably because of my muscles, right? Because my broad, I understand now, my broad shoulders will bust right through this. But I'll be laid out there. I'll be laid out there. And by the way, I'll say this, and I say this to generations of people in this church, because this one, I don't want you to call it a celebration. It's not a celebration, it's a funeral. And you're supposed to be sad. And you're supposed to cry. And I want weeping and wailing. And if you could throw in some gnashing of teeth, that would be fine too. But I want people to be so broken up at my funeral that as they approach the casket and just glance at my handsome face, that they swoon and that they fall down. I'm serious. I want people standing here to catch those that are so broken down in grief. You say, Pastor Monty, do you really? Of course I want that. Why wouldn't you want that? That means you love me. If someone stands around saying, ah, ding dong, the witch is dead. Witch, old witch, the wicked witch, ding dong. That's not a funeral. That will happen one day, someday. Don't you dare sing that around my casket. You know why? Because I'll come back. That will happen one day should the Lord tarry his coming. May I suggest, if you have that in mind, you're more inclined to invest time wisely. The older I get, the more I see that my efforts, even in ministry, by the way, should be invested in things that are valuable. I've limited where I go to preach now dramatically. My goal is now to influence the next generation. That is a huge personal goal that I have. And so I'm interested in pouring my life into young people. I'm interested in that because time is valuable. It's the most valuable thing I have. And frankly, everything in my life depends on time. Without time, nothing else matters. Without time, nothing. Well, Pastor Monty, I've got all the money in the world. But if you only have 10 minutes to live, it makes no difference at all. I view time as something valuable. The issue, by the way, is not how much time you might have left. A sermon like this could cause you to obsess. Hey, boy, the pastor put a warning on me, and I think maybe I don't have much time left. No, I'm not trying to cause you to worry about how much time you have left. That is something we cannot know. But here's what I'm asking you to do. To consider how you fill the present moment. The present moment. What kind of life are you living? Are you living a full life, a life that is beneficial? Are you taking opportunities that you have to serve Christ in this life? Or are you just, Pastor Ronnie, if something happens, well, then I'll be happy, and if nothing happens, I'll sit on the couch. I don't understand people who live that way. I was listening to some teenagers talk, this has been years ago, and they were talking in the church van, and I was talking with them. And I made the comment, we were on a trip, our out west trip, I think, to Minnesota, where I grew up. I made the comment that this area where we were, I said, this is my old stomping grounds. This is my old stomping grounds. And the younger teenager, he didn't have a clue what it meant by old stomping grounds. And so his older brother was on the trip, and I overheard him ask his brother, he said, what'd the preacher mean by his old stomping grounds? And the older brother says, well, he said, that means this is where the preacher hung out. This is where he hunted and fished. This is where he did outdoor stuff. This is where he was when he was growing up. And the younger brother had a little puzzled look on his face. And so the older brother kept explaining. And he said, his old stomping grounds was these woods out here. He said, your stomping grounds is the distance between the couch and the refrigerator. So that's your stomping ground. And I laughed when I heard that because I thought that was funny because I knew it was kind of accurate. But then in my heart of hearts, I thought, what a tragedy. What a tragedy. So many people waste the most valuable commodity they have, which is time. They don't do anything fundamentally good or ill. They just kind of exist. They get sucked into all of the entertainment of our age, and there's nothing wrong with some entertainment, but they don't really live a life. They're not doing anything. The issue is not how much time you have left, but what are you doing with the present moment? God has designed life so that there really are enough hours in each day for us to accomplish His will. What am I doing now? How many remember Coach John Wooden? Do you remember him? I love what he said. He said this. He said, make every day a masterpiece. Well, Pastor Monty, I can't make every day a masterpiece. Why? Well, after all, I have to work. But isn't there some way that you can add meaning to every single day you exist? Isn't there something that you can do? And, well, Pastor, maybe something good will happen to me. See, that's the problem. We're waiting for something good to happen rather than making something good happen. Well, Pastor, maybe my friend will call me. Why don't you call him? Why don't you call her? Well, Pastor Monty, maybe I'll get invited somewhere. I wish someone would invite me somewhere. Why don't you invite somebody else somewhere? In other words, I'm telling you this. If you're going to fill your life with meaningful experiences, you have to be in the driver's seat. You have to make a plan, and don't just sit back and wait for something to happen. The most full lives are lived by people who have a plan, by people who are involved, by people who jump in and are helpful, by people who put their time and their effort into something that is worthwhile, that is how to live a full life. Time is the equivalent, I suppose, of duration. For us, it means existence at the very least. But time also represents opportunity. Look at me, please. I challenged my Sunday school class, and I knew that, and I'm not expecting 100% participation. I'm not expecting that at all. But I challenged them to buy that book that we're looking at, Dr. Peterson's book, 12 Rules for Life. Now, that is a very, very heady book. It is a difficult book. It is a book you have to read. You have to concentrate on it. You have to think. It is not light reading. You have to think. There were paragraphs in that book that I read 5 or 6 times just to get the gist, just to understand the meaning. It's a book that will make you think. The minute I said, oh, best of mine, I'm not going to read that book. It is good to think. How many know that? It is good to think. And so I challenged them to purchase the book. I was very pleased, by the way, when I asked for a show of hands in the class this morning, of the good number of folks that had purchased the book. But now let me say something. It's great. It's great to own a book. It's better to read it. Okay? And that means taking the time and investing the time systematically to read that material and to think about it. Now, I bought the book because you said so, and my wife nudged me and she guilted me into it, so I bought the book. But there it sits. It does no good. Well, I don't have time for that. Listen to me. People, this is generally true of middle-class America. What I'm about to say is generally true of middle-class America. We have the time and the money for what we want to do. That's generally true of middle-class America. And so when we use the excuse that we don't have time, it possibly means we don't discipline our time enough to have time for reading. I believe in my, especially in what I do as a pastor, reading is incredibly important. You can ask our staff. I'm often texting them about the contents of my day at 5 o'clock in the morning. Preacher, why are you up at 5 o'clock in the morning? I'm up reading. Because reading is important, and I can get a lot of reading in before the day actually begins, because when it begins, phones beep and deadlines arrive and I have all kinds of things to do. I can get a lot of reading in that way. But it takes a sense of discipline and urgency. Time is duration. We need to take advantage of every opportunity. If I have time, but I never take advantage of the opportunities that come my way, what am I doing investing my time? Have you ever met someone like this? Everything you invite them to, they say no. Anyone ever? Well, no. No, I'm not going to do that. No, I can't do that. No. What are you going to do tonight? Watch TV. We want to come out and do something, go ride a bike? No, I'm not going to do that. And they say no to every single opportunity, and their life is spent in front of a screen. By the way, there's no way that there's no more effective way that our government can control us, or anyone nefarious can control us, as they can control us by an addiction to that screen. And by the way, the devil knows that if you're busy on that screen for 5 hours a day, I'm not talking about those of you who work in front of a computer. I work with a computer too when I'm typing things, but I'm just talking about free time during the day. The devil knows if he can get you addicted to that, he can make you ineffective in Christian work. He can make you ineffective in your family. He can make you ineffective in your marriage, because that locks you into a private little world where it's just you and your phone. And it's hour after hour after hour. He said, Preacher, how do you know? Well, we all have the same amount of time when it comes to a week. I'm not predicting that you'll all live to the next week. I hope that you do, and I hope that I do. But each week has 168 hours. Okay, think about this. Let's break it down, folks. 168 hours in a week. 56 of those hours are spent in sleep or rest. That is getting 8 hours of sleep a night. How many get 8 hours? You get 8 hours, how many get 7 hours? 7 hours, how many get less than 7 hours? Oh, look at that. You're going to live longer, by the way, if you get a little less. Just a little less, not radically less, but you're supposed to live longer. That's what the doctors say. 7 hours about what you need. 56 hours of sleep or rest per week. Then let's give you some time to eat, because how many like to eat? You're Baptist people, you like to eat. So you've got 7 days in a week. Let's say you eat 3 meals a day, which is totally unnecessary, and that's a bill of goods that was sold to us by people who want you to eat food so that you spend money. But let's say you eat 3 meals a day. That would be that's 21. 7 times 3 is? I gave you the answer. Would you say it? 21. 7 times the best of some said, I'm trying to get my 8 hours in right now. Okay, stop. Wake up for a minute. 7 times 3 is 21, okay? So let's give you 21 hours to eat. That's a lot of eating time. Because who eats for a whole hour every time you sit down and eat? I could see that would be fun, but I think it's a long time. But let's be generous and give you that. Okay, then let's say most of us would work a 40-hour week, but let's say there's overtime. So let's say we have 56 hours in work or study or something related to work or overtime, 56 hours. Do you know what we have left? We have 35 hours, waking hours, that are left. Did you know that's 5 hours a day? Now, I did the math 3 times to make sure I was accurate on this math. That would be about 5 hours a day, because 7 times 5 is 35, isn't it? Okay, thank you. Thank you for those mathematical people out there. That's 35 hours a week that I have typically as discretionary time. Listen carefully. If you break it down like that, how much of that am I investing in something worthwhile? By the way, I was very generous with your sleep. I was very generous with your work. I was very generous with eating. You don't need to spend 21 hours eating, unless you're at a buffet. You don't need to spend 21 hours eating, okay? And so I was very generous with that. I'm saying at minimum, you have 5 hours of waking time per day. Can I ask you a question? Where does it go? Well, I don't know. What? What did someone say? The bathroom? Well, I hope not. Boy, this sermon's going nowhere. I think you do have to spend some time there, but not a considerable amount of time. And if you really find yourself that involved, I would recommend medical attention perhaps immediately. In fact, why don't you just leave now? And might be helpful. You know, when you think about it, time that we have, we really have discretionary time, about 5 hours a day, roughly. Where does it go? If we say we're not sure, then maybe it's possible that we're wasting some of that time. Pastor, what can I do to this? Let me give you some suggestions real quickly, just a few. Number one, stop the leak. Stop the leak. Plan what you're going to do during the day. Now, I don't plan every hour of the day because my day has to be very flexible because of responding to things. But I do write a list of things I'm going to do during a day's time, and I do figure out what time of day is better for them. The famous old British and then later American preacher, Dr. F.B. Meyer, he was known for this. He was a preacher of bygone years, great books. Anything by F.B. Meyer is worth your reading. Dr. Meyer used to break his waking hours of the day into 5-minute segments and plan every one of them. He accomplished a lot in life that way. I'm not so organized, but having a list is helpful. I have a plan for the time that I allotted. I don't wait around idly for something to happen. If, for instance, I know that the weather is going to be good, I look at the weather and I put in a slot for exercise because I need to get exercise. I go walking or ride my bike or something like that. I actually plan that and put in a slot. I don't just see if it's going to happen because there's something else that will crowd it out. I mentally put it into a slot. I work off a list. I want to limit certain pursuits because I have other things to do. I don't want to fall prey to being a slave to the cell phone. Pastor Monty, I was just checking it for a few minutes, and that can turn into a half hour very, very quickly. Why do you think it is that some workplaces don't allow people on their cell phones? Why do you think that is? Because of the exact habit that it can go into a long period of time. So we need to stop the leak of our time. We need also to study our priorities. What is truly important and make sure that gets my time? I can't. Well, Pastor Monty, you're a pastor, so everything's important. No, it's not. I can't be involved in everything that everybody else thinks is important. I'd never get my work done. So I have to choose what I think are the main priorities. Study, for Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, Sunday school, and teaching at Indiana Baptist College, and doing that every week in the school year, those are priorities. When you're speaking 5 or 6 times per week, you've got to focus on study so you have a worthwhile message. So those are priorities, and then some things have to be set aside. I thank the Lord, by the way, for a great staff that we have at this church, and every member of this church should be thankful for our staff, because they come in and help me to be the pastor. They give me the time to prepare, to think, to pray, to read. I'm able to do all of those things because they're upholding the pastor's arms, and I appreciate them so much. I need to consider sometimes the nature of man and invest my free time in the nature of man. What is that? Think with me for a moment. I am a trichotomist. I believe that man is body, soul, and spirit. The soul of man is his mind, will, and emotions. The spirit of man is the part that worships God, and the body is the physical part. I need to plan something that will keep body, soul, and spirit in balance, okay? Most problems that I deal with, there is something off in one area or another. Well, Pastor, you know, if you're dealing with a counseling problem, it's always spiritual. No, not necessarily. It may well be spiritual, but can I make a statement? The spiritual problem bleeds into the other two, the soul, the way of thinking, and oftentimes bleeds into the physical, the body. Those three portions of man, those three parts of man, are so intricately tied together that if we're off balance in one or the other, it throws the other off. So my idea is this: how am I spending my time making sure that my body is okay, planned exercise, purposeful recreation, making sure that my soul is filled? For me, that means reading. So for you, it might mean something else. Maybe it means listening to classical music or whatever you do. Your soul is filled. And then making sure my spirit is right, that I'm praying, that I'm reading my Bible, that I'm genuinely worshiping. Those things take time. Any one of those three areas gets out of balance or out of whack, and all of a sudden you're in trouble. I need to consider the nature of man. I love this. John Wesley said this. John Wesley, the founder of Methodism, he said this: never be unemployed. Now, the word employed, he meant don't be idle, okay? Not don't have a job, like we use the word employed. It means don't be idle. He said, never be unemployed and never be triflingly employed. Triflingly employed? What does that mean? To spend your life dealing with things that don't matter. Trifles. Something that means nothing. It is just entertainment in the present moment. I think Wesley would be shocked by what we do in our day and time. I need then to become the master of my priorities. I don't let other people hijack my priorities. When I was a young preacher, I used to kind of do that. Because I thought being a preacher meant that I had to listen to everyone else's priorities and then make them my priorities. And you know what I discovered? The more I did that, the more jobs I got. And pretty soon we had 14 acres, and pretty soon I was mowing 14 acres with it was fun, though. It was a 1946, I think it was 46, Farmall McCormick tractor that we had with a big bush hog on the end. I got that thing so stuck in a swampy corner of the church property that we had to pull it out with a church bus and a chain. Boy, was that a recite. Farmers came, they stopped just to watch that. The crazy Baptist pastor got his tractor stuck back there. I did all of those things. But you know what I learned? It took away from what should be priorities. I've learned to prioritize my own time. If I don't have a plan, it's easy for me to drift. Because of that, I've also had to learn how to say no. I would like to say yes to everything and everybody. But if I'm going to stay on target, there are sometimes I simply have to say no. No can be a valuable word. No can be a beneficial word for the congregation at large, because it means that I'm investing time in things that I'm doing. So I plan my days. I plan my free times. Without a plan, it's easy to drift. Pastor, I have so many duties. Duties conflict. By the way, I heard someone make this statement. They said one time, duties never conflict. Not true. That is so not true. Okay, I'm a pastor. Let's say we don't have a Gertrude. So let's say Gertrude is at the Methodist hospital and she is an hour from death, doctors say. And let's say Anastasia, because we don't have an Anastasia. Let's say Anastasia is at Hendricks County and she is an hour from death. What do I do? Who do I go to visit? Those are duties. I should be at both places. Is that correct? But it's impossible for me to both be at both places unless I rush up to one and rush to... But really, the drive time between there and the highway is all broken down. Everything's under construction right now. I'll tell you, talk about time. And so it would be hard to do that. Well, how do you... Duties never conflict. Yes, they do. Preacher, what do? I prioritize. You're wondering how that works. Okay, here's how it works. Gertrude has been a faithful member of this church for decades. She has given to this church. She has loved this church. She has served the Lord of this church. She has shown interest in this church. She has given her life to this church. Anastasia, on the other hand, is kind of a fly-by-night. In sometimes, out sometimes. Never serves, doesn't really care. Always has a need, a problem of some sort, just petty little stuff. Gets in bickering, fusses with people in the congregation. Who am I going to go to visit? Gertrude. Well, that's true. Favoritism. It's okay. Do you know why? She earned that. Now, oh, this is so hard for me to hear. I can't believe the... Grow up. Grow up, okay? I have to prioritize. Sometimes the decisions are hard. It's not that I wouldn't like to be with Anastasia and help her through... That's a girl's name, right? Help her through... Just made that up. Help her... It's not that I wouldn't want to do that. But I have to prioritize, and priorities are right. Does everyone follow me? And sometimes those are hard choices. But you have to do that with your time. There's no way you can divide your time. Sometimes duties do conflict. When I have gaps in time, I fill them with useful things. I will always have something to read. If I'm going to the doctor's office and have to wait for anything, I will always have something to read. Sometimes it's a book I've downloaded on my phone. Other times it's a physical book that I will carry with me. By the way, always have a plan B. Always has something else you can do. So-and-so canceled. Well, okay, I've got something else I could do. I work, as I mentioned a moment ago, off of a to-do list. I think that's important. I think you get more out of life by planning more into it. You might write that down because that's a good thought. You get more out of life by planning more into it. Don't just be default to your TV or to Facebook. Plan to go on a walk or ride your bike or read. Well, Pastor Juan, you know, in the morning I get all enthusiastic about this kind of thing. But I say, you know, when I get off of work, I'm gonna go for that walk in the sunshine. The preacher makes it sound like it's fun. It is. Well, sometimes. And maybe not the first 2 weeks, but if you do it consistently for 2 weeks, it starts to get kind of fun. And so you have to do it for 2 weeks, and that's a whole other sermon. So you're gung ho. Then you've had a hard day at work, and you come home, and you're like, oh, just don't feel like it. Okay. The first step to getting a life is doing things you don't feel like. Do you know what I find? Well, I just can't bring myself to do that. Do you know what I find? If I force myself, I start enjoying it. If I just sit down on TV and veg, and that's okay sometimes. I'm not condemning that sometimes. But if that's all I do every day and never force myself out of what is my comfort zone at that moment. See, this is where a lot of people are stuck. They're just stuck. I'm just comfortable with this. This is my comfort zone, and then this is what I do. And you never do anything else. And you never grow. And you never go beyond anything else. And you never say to yourself, if I don't feel like it, I'm still going to do it because it's the best thing to do. Years ago, I had a lady come to my office. She explained that she was depressed, and she felt all cooped up in her house, and she had all these issues, and she was just blah, and she wanted help. And so I said, here's what you need to do. I said, every day you need to get out. When you get up earlier than you do in the morning, then I said, go out when the weather's nice, go outside, go for a walk. I went through this whole big plan, and she looked at me, and she said, Pastor, I know you're right, but I just don't feel like it. What? Okay, if you know, I'm venting right now. Just let me vent. Sometimes Kelly says that to me. Let me vent. I'm venting. If you know what I'm saying is right, then just do it, whether you feel like it or not. Because do you know what I found in life? The feeling often comes after the doing. There's people in this room right now. You don't particularly like social events. For some reason, you got it in your head. You just don't like social events. But then you force yourself. I'm just going to force myself to go. And you force yourself to go. And within 10 minutes, you start having fun. And then you get home from that and you say, wow, That was really fun. And then the next invitation comes. Oh, I don't want to go that. I don't feel like that. Folks, having a life sometimes means stepping outside of what you feel like. It sometimes means trying something new. You get more out of life by putting more into it. You plan an activity. You plan a social event. You plan to walk or ride your bike. You plan to read. Anyone can sit around. Anyone can do that. Anyone can sit around. You're the person who needs to make sure life happens. Do you know why? Because we're to redeem that time. We're to redeem that time. That picture this way, and I know I've gone over, but I'll finish. I took some of your time, went over. Picture this way. I want to squeeze everything I can out of the life that I have because I'm not promised tomorrow, I'm not promised next week, and I'm not promised next month. But you know what I have right now? I have right now. Redeem the time. And I don't have time to get into the whole second half of the message because the days are evil. Get every bit of good you can out of every minute you can because the days are evil. Things are uncertain. A crisis is always waiting around the next bend. And so why waste the good times by not investing them as you should? Redeem the time, for the days are evil. Father, thank you for your word and for some thoughts. I pray, Lord, something that was said tonight would help us to understand the value of time. Lord, maybe we just need to make some decisions about how we're spending our time, or maybe we need to analyze that and look at what really is important. Father, I pray that there's something in this message that someone would take this week and they would apply it. And they would find themselves not only challenged by it, but changed by it. Spirit of God, make us aware of the limitations of time in our own lives. Father, I pray that you'll help us to recognize the value of this moment. The value, Lord, of this moment. And help us, Lord, to carry that philosophy throughout our days, we pray. In Jesus' name. Let's stand, please, together. We'll all